Chapter 134. Say Nothing More, which Mrs. Gamp regarded as the triumph of her art. There. She said, loosening the old man's cravat, in consequence of his being rather black in the face, after this scientific treatment. Now, I hope, you're easy in your mind. If you should turn at all faint, we can soon revive you, sir, I promise you. Bite a person's thumbs, or turn their fingers the wrong way, said Mrs. Gamp, smiling with the consciousness of at once imparting pleasure and instruction to her auditors, and they comes to, wonderful, Lord bless you. As this excellent woman had been formerly entrusted with the care of Mr. Chuffey on a previous occasion, neither Mrs. Jonas nor anybody else had the resolution to interfere directly with her mode of treatment, though all present, Tom Pinch and his sister especially, appeared to be disposed to differ from her views. For such is the rash boldness of the uninitiated, that they will frequently set up some monstrous abstract principle, such as humanity, or tenderness, or the like idle folly, in obstinate defiance of all precedent and usage, and will even venture to maintain the same against the persons who have made the precedents, and established the usage, and who must therefore be the best, and most impartial judges of the subject. Ah, Mr. Pinch! Said Miss Pecksniff. It all comes of this unfortunate marriage. If my sister had not been so precipitate, and had not united herself to a wretch, there would have been no Mr. Chuffey in the house. Hush! Cried Tom. She'll hear you. I should be very sorry if she did hear me, Mr. Pinch, said Cherry, raising her voice a little, for it is not in my nature to add to the uneasiness of any person, far less of my own sister. I know what a sister's duties are, Mr. Pinch, and I hope I always showed it in my practice. Augustus, my dear child, find my pocket handkerchief, and give it to me. Augustus obeyed, and took Mrs. Todgers aside to pour his griefs into her friendly bosom. I am sure, Mr. Pinch, said Charity, looking after her betrothed and glancing at her sister, that I ought to be very grateful for the blessings I enjoy, and those which are yet in store for me. When I contrast Augustus's here she was modest and embarrassed too, I don't mind saying to you, is all softness, mildness, and devotion, with the detestable man who is my sister's husband. And when I think, Mr. Pinch, that in the dispensations of this world, our cases might have been reversed, I have much to be thankful for, indeed, and much to make me humble and contented. Contented she might have been, but humble she assuredly was not. Her face and manner experienced something so widely different from humility, that Tom could not help understanding and despising the base motives that were working in her breast. He turned away, and said to Ruth, that it was time for them to go. I will write to your husband, said Tom to Mary, and explain to him, as I would have done, if I had met him here, that if he has sustained any inconvenience through my means, it is not my fault, a postman not being more innocent of the news he brings, than I was when I handed him that letter. I thank you. Said Mary. It may do some good. She parted tenderly from Ruth, who with her brother, was in the act of leaving the room, when a key was heard in the lock of the door below, and immediately afterwards a quick footstep in the passage. Tom stopped, and looked at Mary. It was Jonas, she said timidly. I had better not meet him on the stairs, perhaps, said Tom, drawing his sister's arm through his, and coming back a step or two. I'll wait for him here, a moment. He had scarcely said it when the door opened, and Jonas entered. His wife came forward to receive him, but he put her aside with his hand, and said in a surly tone, I didn't know you'd got a party. As he looked, at the same time, either by accident or design, towards Miss Pecksniff, and as Miss Pecksniff was only too delighted to quarrel with him, she instantly resented it. "Oh dear! Apostrophe, apostrophe," she said, rising. "Pray don't let us intrude upon your domestic happiness. That would be a pity. We have taken tea here, sir, in your absence, but if you will have the goodness to send us a note of the expense receipted, we shall be happy to pay it. Augustus, my love, we will go, if you please. Mrs. Todgers, unless you wish to remain here, we shall be happy to take you with us. It would be a pity, indeed, to spoil the bliss which this gentleman always brings with him, especially into his own home." Apostrophe, charity. Charity. Apostrophe remonstrated her sister, in such a heartfelt tone, that she might have been imploring her to show the cardinal virtue whose name she bore. "Mary, my dear, I am much obliged to you for your advice," apostrophe returned Miss Pecksniff, with a stately scorn. By the way, she had not been offered any, "but I am not a slave," apostrophe, "no, nor wouldn't have been if you could," apostrophe interrupted Jonas. "We know all about it." Apostrophe, "what did you say, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Pecksniff, sharply. "Didn't you hear?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Jonas, lounging down upon a chair. "I am not a going to say it again. If you like to stay, you may stay. If you like to go, you may go. But if you stay, please to be civil. Apostrophe, beast." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Pecksniff, sweeping past him. "Augustus. He is beneath your notice." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Augustus had been making some faint and sickly demonstration of shaking his fist. "Come away, child," apostrophe screamed Miss Pecksniff, "I command you." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the scream was elicited from her by Augustus manifesting an intention to return and grapple with him. But Miss Pecksniff giving the fiery youth a pull, and Mrs. Todgers giving him a push, they all three tumbled out of the room together, to the music of Miss Pecksniff's shrill remonstrances. All this time Jonas had seen nothing of Tom and his sister, for they were almost behind the door when he opened it, and he had sat down with his back towards them, and had purposely kept his eyes upon the opposite side of the street during his altercation with Miss Pecksniff, in order that his seeming carelessness might increase the exasperation of that wronged young damsel. His wife now faltered out that Tom had been waiting to see him, and Tom advanced. The instant he presented himself, Jonas got up from his chair, and swearing a great oath, caught it in his grasp, as if he would have felled Tom to the ground with it, as he most unquestionably would have done, but that his very passion and surprise made him irresolute, and gave Tom, in his calmness, an opportunity of being heard. "You have no cause to be violent, sir," apostrophe said Tom. "Though what I wish to say relates to your own affairs, I know nothing of them, and desire to know nothing of them." Apostrophe, Jonas was too enraged to speak. He held the door open, and stamping his foot upon the ground, motioned Tom away. "As you cannot suppose," apostrophe said Tom, "that I am here with any view of conciliating you or pleasing myself, I am quite indifferent to your reception of me, or your dismissal of me. Hear what I have to say, if you are not a madman. I gave you a letter the other day, when you were about to go abroad." Apostrophe, "you thief, you did." Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Jonas. "I'll pay you for the carriage of it one day, and settle an old score besides. I will." Apostrophe, "tut, tut," apostrophe said Tom, "you needn't waste words or threats. I wish you to understand plainly, because I would rather keep clear of you, and everything that concerns you. Not because I have the least apprehension of your doing me any injury, which would be weak indeed, that I am no party to the contents of that letter, that I know nothing of it, that I was not even aware that it was to be delivered to you, and that I had it from apostrophe by the Lord." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jonas, fiercely catching up the chair, "I'll knock your brains out if you speak another word." Apostrophe, Tom, nevertheless, persisting in his intention, and opening his lips to speak again, Jonas set upon him like a savage, and in the quickness and ferocity of his attack, would have surely done him some grievous injury, defenseless as he was, and embarrassed by having his frightened sister clinging to his arm, if Mary had not run between them, crying to Tom for the love of heaven to leave the house. The agony of this poor creature, the terror of his sister, the impossibility of making himself audible, and the equal impossibility of bearing up against Mrs. Gamp, who threw herself upon him like a feather bed, and forced him backwards down the stairs by the mere oppression of her dead weight, prevailed. Tom shook the dust of that house off his feet, without having mentioned Nadgett's name. If the name could have passed his lips, if Jonas, in the insolence of his vile nature, had never roused him to do that old act of manliness, for which, and not for his last offense, he hated him with such malignity, if Jonas could have learned, as then he could and would have learned, through Tom's means, what unsuspected spy there was upon him, he would have been saved from the commission of a guilty deed, then drawing on towards its black accomplishment. But the fatality was of his own working, the pit was of his own digging, the gloom that gathered round him was the shadow of his own life. His wife had closed the door, and thrown herself before it, on the ground, upon her knees. She held up her hands to him now, and besought him not to be harsh with her, for she had interposed in fear of bloodshed. So. ' said Jonas, looking down upon her, as he fetched his breath. These are your friends, are they, when I am away? You plot and tamper with this sort of people, do you? ' No, indeed. I have no knowledge of these secrets, and no clue to their meaning. I have never seen him, since I left home, but once but twice before today. ' sneered Jonas, catching at this correction. But once, but twice, eh? Which do you mean? Twice and once, perhaps. Three times. How many more, you lying jade? As he made an angry motion with his hand, she shrunk down hastily. A suggestive action. Full of a cruel truth. How many more times? He repeated. No more. The other morning, and today, and once besides. He was about to retort upon her, when the clock struck. He started, stopped, and listened, appearing to revert to some engagement, or to some other subject, a secret within his own breast, recalled to him by this record of the progress of the hours. Don't lie there. Get up. Having helped her to rise, or rather hauled her up by the arm, he went on to say, "Listen to me, young lady, and don't whine when you have no occasion, or I may make some for you. If I find him in my house again, or find that you have seen him in anybody else's house, you'll repent it. If you are not deaf and dumb to everything that concerns me, unless you have my leave to hear and speak, you'll repent it. If you don't obey exactly what I order, you'll repent it. Now, attend. What's the time? It struck 8 a minute ago. He looked towards her intently, and said, with a labored distinctness, as if he had got the words off by heart. I have been traveling day and night, and am tired. I have lost some money, and that don't improve me. Put my supper in the little off room below, and have the truckle bed made. I shall sleep there tonight, and maybe tomorrow night, and if I can sleep all day tomorrow, so much the better, for I've got trouble to sleep off, if I can. Keep the house quiet, and don't call me. Mind. Don't call me. Don't let anybody call me. Let me lie there. She said it should be done. Was that all? All what? You must be prying and questioning. He angrily retorted. What more do you want to know? I want to know nothing, Jonas, but what you tell me. All hope of confidence between us has long deserted me. Ecod, I should hope so. He muttered. But if you will tell me what you wish, I will be obedient, and will try to please you. I make no merit of that, for I have no friend in my father or my sister, but am quite alone. I am very humble and submissive. You told me you would break my spirit, and you have done so. Do not break my heart too. Apostrophe, she ventured, as she said these words, to lay her hand upon his shoulder. He suffered it to rest there, in his exultation, and the whole mean, abject, sordid, pitiful soul of the man, looked at her, for the moment, through his wicked eyes. For the moment only, for, with the same hurried return to something within himself, he bade her, in a surly tone, show her obedience by executing his commands without delay. When she had withdrawn, he paced up and down the room several times, but always with his right hand clenched, as if it held something, which it did not, being empty. When he was tired of this, he threw himself into a chair, and thoughtfully turned up the sleeve of his right arm, as if he were rather musing about its strength than examining it. But, even then, he kept the hand clenched. He was brooding in this chair, with his eyes cast down upon the ground, when Mrs. Gamp came in to tell him that the little room was ready. Not being quite sure of her reception, after interfering in the quarrel, Mrs. Gamp, as a means of interesting and propitiating her patron, affected a deep solicitude in Mr. Chuffey. How is he now, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said. Who? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jonas, raising his head, and staring at her. To be sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the matron with a smile and a curtsy. What am I thinking of? He wasn't here, sir, when he was took so strange. I never see a poor dear creature took so strange in all my life, except a patient much about the same age as I once must, which his calling was the custom us, and his name was Mrs. Harris's own father, as pleasant a singer, Mr. Chuzzlewit, as ever you heard, with a voice like a Jew's harp in the bass notes, that it took six men to hold at such times, foaming frightful. Apostrophe, Chuffy, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jonas carelessly, seeing that she went up to the old clerk and looked at him. Ha! Apostrophe, the creature's head so hot, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, that you might heat a flat iron at it. And no wonder, I am sure, considering the things he said. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.